It's 1890, and the citizens of Boston are beginning to go missing in the fog. Police are confused, the public is frightened, and the city is on the edge of hysteria. It's up to the mysterious Smith, inventor and adventurer, to figure out what's going on with the help of his assistant, April Malone. We'll have to face off against the secret society, corrupt policemen, and a mad psychologist hell-bent on dissecting Smith in order to solve the mystery of what's going on and to save the city from a more sinister threat. It's The Chronological Man, The Monster in the Mist, a fast-paced 45,000-word tale of science adventure, written by Andrew Main. And it's available to you for only $1 on the Amazon Kindle store. Download it on your Kindle, iPad, or any major phone, including iPhone, Android, BlackBerry, and Windows 7. Either way, don't miss The Chronological Man, The Monster in the Mist, available for only $1. Bandwidth for the Weird Things podcast provided by WiredTree. For sites of any size and world-class customer service, head on over to WiredTree.com.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the Weird Things podcast. I'm Andrew Main, joined by Mr. Brian Brushwood the First.
You know, I used to, when I was in high school, I used to call myself Brian Brushwood the First because I thought that was hilarious. Although now, after watching Game of Thrones, I'd be like Brian Brushwood, the first of his name.
I'm sure that would really impress the ladies.
The one of them who had read Game of Thrones, yes. You like Game of Thrones. Don't be giving me the sass.
That would be Mr. Justin Robert Young, you heard, sassing Brian.
Yeah, I did
the
like
first
Game
of his name.
I did really like. I would like to talk to George R. R. Martin. He seems like a very nice guy, a jovial fellow.
Yes.
Did you finish the book? You finished the first book.
I did finish the first.
Did you watch the rest of the HBO?
No.
Okay.
I'm waiting to watch it with Andrew.
Oh, yes. Well, that'll be good. Now you could be that guy.
I get scared very easily. I need somebody to comfort me.
What's going on, Andrew?
Well, guys, you know, I thought we'd maybe start right off the top with a scenario.
I like this.
We got a lot of good news, and I got a couple fun scenarios. We might do some quick ones here, but here's what we're gonna do. We got a little weirdo out there, a little Weird Things fan who's going in for some surgery.
Wait, is that what we call our Weird Things fans? Our weirdos? Because that's awesome.
Yeah, sure.
I think we've had three nicknames for them.
I like weirdos.
I feel like it was like weirdlings. Yeah.
Ooh, weirdlings.
And now it's
good
weirdos.
Too.
That's fine. Well, I like weirdos.
Well, this person, they're getting a kidney. They're going to be getting a new kidney, and you know, you start thinking about that. Like,
it's always good to upgrade every 5 years.
What's that?
It's always good to upgrade every 5 years.
Yeah, exactly.
So what are you running, kidney 2.5?
Well, here's what I want to do, all right? I want to do a scenario, and this is what we're going to do. We're going to give each other kidneys, not our own kidneys, because God knows what those things look like, okay?
Sure.
Just deteriorated, whatever condition they are in. I'm going to gift each of you, okay? I want both of you. Imagine a box. You can actually hold up the box in front of you, okay? Yep. Each one of you hold up a box, and I'm going to tell you what I got you, kidney-wise.
All right.
You like this?
All right. No, I got it. Here, I'm looking at the...
Brian, hold up your box, Brian.
My mind races to think of the varieties of kidneys. Like, what is it? Oh, and this is teriyaki style.
You got salsa kidney.
All right, you're going last then, Justin. Brian gets his kidney first.
All right, fine. Back of the line with you.
Can I open it? Can I open it?
You ready to open? I'm going to tell you what it is, all right?
Oh, you can hear the packaging.
Uh-huh. He's opening the kidney. He's looking inside. All right. Now you're like, you see just like a big kidney sitting there, right?
Yes.
And you're like, I hope this has been packed on ice recently, right?
Well, yes. I hope it's not like a bovine kidney that I'm just supposed to eat.
Better. You look up at me. You're looking up at me like, and you're like waiting for the explanation because I didn't give you a card because I wanted to tell you what your kidney is. You ready?
Yeah.
I murdered Aquaman. You got Aquaman's kidney.
Ah!
Now, you can't breathe underwater all along, okay?
Dude,
but you're good for 40 minutes.
Oh, so he can stay there forever. But you're saying I have a little bit of Aquaman in me.
Yeah, like 40 minutes. Yeah, you got 40 minutes out of Aquaman's
kidney. Maybe I can't, like, talk to fish, but maybe we're like, we could, like, wink at each other. Like, that's
fist
all
bump a dolphin. Fist bump a dolphin.
Oh, So good. Okay, in your face,
Justin.
I have
always heard Brian say, like, man, I would love to have a little bit of Aquaman in me.
So, Brian, you like? You like?
I love to get in the water and just feeling them all up inside me. Yes. No, I love it. This is great.
All right, Justin, you ready?
All right. I've got my box.
I should open it up.
I'm shaking it. I don't know what's in it. I'm sure it's a kidney.
It's kind of squishy. It's kind of squishy.
All right. I'm now opening the box. What's in the box, Andrew?
All right. You ready? You're looking at you. What do you reach inside? What do you feel?
It feels like a kidney.
Right, right. Gary Coleman's kidney. No. I gave you.
Yes.
Richard Nixon's kidneys. Little did you know, before he died, we had it put on ice. Now, you got two kidneys. I'm just going to give you one. Richard, so you're going to get a Nixon kidney.
Well, I mean, like, I am a history buff. I do very much enjoy the topic of American politics, and certainly on some kind of, a historical level, this is important. But
I'm kidding.
Okay.
I give you a panther kidney.
Now, yeah! Wait a minute.
Hopefully my body doesn't reject it.
Well, we'll try it out. Now, this is what's going to happen with your panther kidney. You ready? Okay.
Okay.
I'm just kidding about the Nixon kidney. Okay. It would have been a Hitler kidney anyways if I was going to give you a historical figure.
Although Nixon's nickname was the panther.
Yes, that's true.
That.
It's true, the panther. Your panther kidney, this is what it does. Okay. Now, you can climb pretty good now. You can kind of climb trees. You feel the urge, you start climbing. You can, like, keep climbing and climbing and climbing. Like, Brian, I'll pull in somewhere, right? We're like, oh, let's go to Arby's. And I'm like, all right, Justin. And we turn around, and you're gone. And we look, and there's, like, a big, like, evergreen tree. And you're up at the top of it, and it's swaying back and forth because you're like, hey, guys, I'm a panther. I climb trees.
Yeah.
And then you attack small children, which we've had to, you know.
What?
Okay, and what kind of kidney are you going to have?
I don't know. You guys got to give me a kidney.
You know what? You can have Brian's old kidney and be riddled with self-doubt and loathing.
And it smells like camping fuel from
yes,
all the fire.
Yes, exactly. And it's like, to be honest, I'm just glad that I got rid of it because I'm clearly half dead from all the fire I've been eating and the crap I'm processing every time I go pee.
Okay, well, I mean, listen, Andrew did go out of his way to give us two pretty ridiculously awesome kidneys. So we do need to give him some kind of really amazing kidney.
But I mean, like, maybe like Hemingway's kidney or, you know, like Keith Richards' kidney or something, you know? I mean, God, that thing's got, you know, that's like, it's like a car that's made to like 500,000 miles, you know? Everything could go wrong has gone wrong. It's going to last.
But really, like, Brian, what kidney do you get to the man who already processes everything?
What do you get for the man who can have any kidney he wants? You give him his own kidneys. We stab you as a thanks for your gift. We rip out your kidney. And we're like, here you are, Andrew. And then I dive off with fishes and swim away.
That's not even a gift. That's murder.
I know.
So and if a you had high pitched voice for no reason.
If you got a kidney and it gave you some sort of power, what would you be pleasantly surprised to find out?
Okay.
I mean, I think probably like eating or like gaining like
Wolverine healing potential?
Well, just I mean the ability to kind of process any food or drink would be good. So it wasn't just like you could get nutrients out of anything.
Like
you'd be
like
Mr. Fusion.
Pop your hood. No, like seriously, pop your hood. Like, what are you going to do? Yeah. Trust me. You pop your hood, right? He pulls out the oil stick, licks it down. You're like, wow, that's kind of gross. He's hold on. Undoes your battery, pops the battery up, drinks the battery acid in front of you.
You know
like,
what?
Super
exactly.
Cool.
Right, how about and this? Then just starts doing backflips because you've gained yes. so much energy from it.
All right. How about this? All right. What if you had a kidney that injected your body with chlorophyll and you could derive energy from the sun?
But would I be green? That might be kind of cool.
I guess you would have to be green. Yes.
My fear of like, if I got like Hulk green, I'd look like just like a sickly green.
No,
I wouldn't be like the cool.
Yeah, I mean, you will look sickly green. I'm going to say like kind of a...
You also would kind of look like the Jolly Green Giant's cousin. Like, not the little
one. But, like, keep in mind, Jolly Green
Giant... Not the Jolly Green Giant himself.
Yeah,
like somebody in the family.
Jolly Green Giant's Aunt Bertrude was actually full-on human. So her whole side is a little bit halvesies, and it's a bit awkward at the reunion. You'll look like one of them.
He's a half green.
He's, well, that's a derogatory term, Justin, and it's abusive to the Jollies, okay?
The Jollies.
They don't, we had this discussion. We don't use the HG at the dinner table.
Yeah.
Would you implant it though, or would you trade it on eBay?
I'd implant it, carve me up, try it. Sure.
Are you kidding? It's free energy from the sun. You're solar powered.
I know, I'm putting it on
green.
Me. I'm taking
that.
That
kind of sucks.
You don't sound like you are appreciating it. Maybe it's because it's not as flashy as
you
Justin's.
You are kind of half A in this one, Andrew. You're not really enthused.
I am so fully committed to this. I'm like, yes, of course. Of course. I'm into this. I'm going to get a kidney that all of a sudden will be powered by the sun. That is awesome. I'm like a day vampire, a reverse vampire. It's awesome.
Yeah, but Brian was like already putting on his swim trunks when you told him about his kidney. Like, I started licking myself like a panther when you told me about mine.
Like, you like it's a sweater three sizes too large. You're like, oh.
I'm already planning on turning my house into a grow house, okay?
Energy
I'm already
going to
go pick
sun.
Up a copy of High Times and order the lamps and all this stuff. And you guys are just criticizing me because you don't understand what's going on inside my head. For our radio listeners, my podcast, I'm making a head motion towards my head, pointing.
Yes.
That there's just calculations and stuff, yet it's actually kind of like clockwork and like a couple weasels running around a treadmill.
Okay, so what you're saying is... you wanted Superman's kidney, and I know you talked about it, and I'm sorry. That doesn't exist. And plus, if it did exist, we couldn't cut him open because we don't have any kryptonite knives. And so what we did is we got you a chlorophyll kidney, and that's pretty much the same thing. He gets energy from the sun. You get energy from the sun. Your father worked very hard to provide this kidney for you, and I'd appreciate it if you showed a little more respect.
I'm sorry. Well, we've got some news to talk about, gentlemen.
But first, Brian and Andrew, let me remind everybody that Deidre and Daniel have sponsored this episode. Yes, folks, they're just a couple of kids who love this podcast out there in the Steel City of Pittsburgh.
I cannot decide who I like more, Deidre or Daniel. I was thinking the other day.
Deidre, without a question.
Yeah, but see, Daniel, though, pretty sure he was the one who pushed to sponsor. Deidre was sort of like, oh, I love watching weird things. Pretty sure it was Daniel was just like, you know what? Let's sponsor weird things.
Oh, and that's how your love goes, Brian?
Yes.
Is that the way you work? Okay.
You just get paid off like a common street strumpet.
Street strumpet. That's what I am.
Paymasters.
Yes, correct. Correct. Yep. No,
clever.
I'm on team
Paymasters.
Daniel.
Like Deidre and Daniel of Pittsburgh, thank you for sponsoring the podcast.
I like Pittsburgh. That was a fun town.
It is.
Primanti Brothers was good. They're shooting Batman there. Pretty much rocks. So, a while ago, we're talking about you guys were upset because I had this sort of stoic look on my face.
Yeah.
And you didn't think that I was overjoyed.
So, hey, remember that 5 seconds ago?
You know what? If only there was a way to look inside my head.
What you mean, and like know what you were thinking or seeing or dreaming?
To see the movie in my head.
So you mean like take a pizza cutter and keep rubbing it over your scalp and then the bone until eventually we see your brain? Like
well,
that
no,
kind
no,
of
no,
look
but,
inside
but,
your
but
head?
There are, but Andrew, I see what you're saying. There is a way. It's called through the spoken word. It's called the poetry of
the
communication.
The Spokane Word. It's a festival in Seattle.
The Spokane Word Festival is where we can look inside your head.
It's in Seattle for no reason, but yeah.
Exactly. No, but like we already can. Like, isn't that what somebody like Stephen King in On Writing talks about how writing is a bizarre one-way time-delayed telepathy where he can conjure images lifetimes away from himself in space and time on the other side of the world and make you see what he's seeing. Isn't that what you're talking about?
Brian, I'm done with words. I'm past words in that form of communication. I'm ready to start just making movies in my head and let you see them. But you go, Brander, it's impossible.
bro.
Other than the fact that we talked about this earlier in the week and geeked out over the video we saw.
Yeah, dude, this is friggin' epic. Did you see this, Justin?
What?
Did you not tell
Are
Justin?
Are you guys weirding out behind my back? This was a trio.
You know, Brian, Justin just doesn't understand.
He can't understand.
Go on side dalliances.
I'm so tired of him just trying to make everything into a Wolverine joke. That's right. Let's geek out alone, just the two of us. Come on.
So well, some scientists at some place really where they do science.
Where are you saying that?
Did an experiment involving science. And what they did was they found something out. It's amazing and good at journalism, I know. So here's the deal. So like they've been talking about for years, like what if you could peer inside of people's heads? And so they use like big MRIs to look inside there. Like three volunteers, I think they're people who work for the lab because nobody wanted to sit there long enough. And they showed them all the same like video clips, right? The same video clips. And then they had the imaging tried to pick up which parts of the brain were responding to what. And they got to the point where the machine was able to reassemble and figure out what a person was looking at and create this crude sort of image, which would be cool if we had an article up on Weird Things about this, but we don't. So you're just going to have to use the mental imaging.
And this is theater of the mind anyway, but as I understood it, as they played... They played all the different clips of different things, whether it's text on a screen, whether it's a fighter jet, whether it's a swan swimming across a lake, a close-up of a man's face or whatever. And each time they paid attention to the visual section of the brain and they recorded where the activity was, essentially creating a fingerprint of what the response was visually inside the brain for each of these different clips. Then they would play sort of a mystery clip. And they didn't know what the clip was, but they basically took that fingerprint and matched it with a mashup of previous images. And it's unreal how bizarrely accurate it is. Now, it's not enough to where you could look at the video clip that was reconstructed and say, oh, he's clearly looking at this scene from the Pink Panther. But it is like he's clearly seeing a man moving from left to right, rocking on his heels. Or it's clearly some kind of text of some variety on a background, although we can't. But this is like as a first step, this is revolutionary, right?
Oh, man. I mean, it's awesome. And that's you think about we're at the point now where you look at it, like you said, it looked like web video circa 1995, you know, but and it's as the resolution gets better, as we're able to get more. I'm surprised we're able to do what the current brain imaging technology that was this far along. But as it gets better, you're going to start to be able to get better pictures. You'll probably use predictive software to sort of say, OK, that's probably an eye. Let me create an eye. Kind of the sort of the way our own brains work when we dream. We dream very much in abstract things. We say, I'm in a car. I'm in this. But I think it's going to get to a point where probably will be, you know, you put a helmet on and start creating very horrific, very frightening shows for your friends.
Well, and
record them.
And you just nailed it. There are two applications for this because part of the reason I was whole talking up, like essentially language is our mind communication mechanism where we take thoughts and translate them into words and pictures that we describe and the other person receives them. There are people who cannot speak or cannot communicate and we can see what they're seeing or even more interesting is we can see because when you dream, your body doesn't know the difference between that which is vividly imagined versus that which is real. We could see people's dreams now real time.
Yeah, I don't know if it takes place in a different part of the brain or not. I don't know. I mean, I was just reading the research about that, but it may. That's the idea that we're able to in the brain get that like what you're saying. You know, that might be an eventuality to it.
Yeah, no, it'll. I have no idea. I mean, obviously, look, I mean, as a first step, it's exciting because this is where the rampant speculation begins.
Yeah, the whole idea of recording, what people see as they see it.
Do you think this could be used for, like, getting something out of someone's mind that they might not want to share? Or is that a possible... an interrogation thing or something?
I don't know which part of the brain they're processing it in. And for our podcast listeners, I'm making my hands in the shape of a brain. I don't know which part of the brain where they're doing the processing of it. It's just where the first part where the occipital lobe where it goes in there and it gets that. Or how things go as far as they're recalled. But that would be, I mean, if you can pick it up in one part, you might be able to do it in another part. And that would be fascinating. I mean, that could be the thing, because I could tell you, like Justin, try not to think of the girl you murdered. Try not to think of the girl you murdered.
Well, it's, as I understood it, it was the whatever part of the brain it was the part that there was no conscious thought involved in it. It was just purely, you know, either the visual cortex or the optic nerve or something like that.
But when you think about it, because you would be like, okay, so let's say that you can, that we have an imperfect technology or what we can reasonably believe to be what somebody is thinking in an interrogation sense, right? Like, at what point does that become as legitimate, if not more legitimate, than what we have as a standard lie detector test?
Well, and the lie detectors still aren't, you know, admissible in court.
Absolutely, yeah.
Yeah.
So it's like, you know, it's not as high of a hurdle that as one might think, considering that we look at those kind of tests as somewhat legitimate, obviously not legally, but, you know, how far are we from this where, you know, you're watching, you know, you're having Kara Sedgwick bark at you, and then all of a sudden you show them, you know, the street name where you bury that hooker.
Now, okay, now I'll tell you what, though, regardless of the practical applications, irrespective of them, yes.
Yes.
I would love just to the moment I wake up, be able to watch my dreams that were recorded at the end, because when you dream, there's a reason that your brain purges all of that, because it's not helpful to have permanent memories written down.
Dreams,
because your brain needs to know like what happened and what didn't happen, and when you wake up after you've done the exercise of essentially your brain seems to run through practice simulations as you sleep all night. And to help you solve problems when you wake up. And it's not helpful to remember all those as facts, so it purges them. That's why it's so hard to remember stuff. And people, if you write a dream journal or if you mentally go over the dream over and over, you'll remember the parts that you'll remember remembering the dream is essentially what you do, right? But, like, imagine if you could wake up and immediately watch the last five-minute dream from beginning to end. How bizarre it would be to take all that imagery, because it would be this immediate refresher of what you just saw, and you could fight that, and you could write these bizarre narratives in your mind.
You could remember being befriended by Joseph Gordon-Levitt and Leonardo DiCaprio, and then making out with the lady that turned out to be Tom Hardy.
Exactly. That was Inception, right?
Billy Madison was that film.
Gotcha.
The film he plays in his head every night. Well, do you guys ever have this, though, where you go, you dream, and then you remember a place that you had a dream about years before? Like, I have, like, buildings and other stuff, and sometimes I keep going back to them.
Can I tell you that I had an exceptional dream just last night? And I can't believe that I didn't think to tell you this, Justin, because I've told both of you.
Uh-oh.
I've told both. It's a me and Justin dream.
What is? Really, Brian? Has the day finally come?
Do you know that I have a recurring nightmare? Have I told either of you about this?
Am I involved with your recurring nightmare?
You are now, as of last night.
Wow. So welcome to the team.
The recurring nightmare is I show up for one of my stage shows. And I set everything up, and we're short on time. Everything's going fast. The crowd shows up, and they're like, you got to go. You got to get started. And so I start, and I'm good with the fire eating. And then it's like I go to grab the human blockhead, but it's not there. And I'm like, oh, it's in a trunk. Hold on. And I start opening it, and then I realize the sound system isn't hooked up. And I'm like, dude, I can't even do Mr. Happy Pants without the music. Hold on. And I start setting everything up. And eventually the audience starts talking. They get bored. And eventually they start leaving the theater. And I'm like, okay, we'll take a short break. And we'll just get started here in a bit. And then I wake up. And it's like, and I say nightmare. It's not like I wake up in a cold sweat or anything. But it's like I wake up every morning. I'm just like, son of a bitch. That dream again. I had that dream.
And before you say the dream right now, but in the cold sweat thing, like, does anybody ever actually wake up with like sitting up straight in bed, like the Undertaker, you know, like waking up, like, you know, I feel like that's something that people always talk about. I wish I did. It'd just be such a cool way to.
Oh no, I've had for reals nightmares that were that way. Totally.
That you're like,
yes, no, for reals. Yes. And I mean, if I opened
it even had an a fisheye lens too, where you got the real distortion.
Yes,
of it. You know?
Yes, exactly. Okay.
All right. So this dream.
Last night's dream was I had to set up the computer remotely to do a live NSFW show.
A whole new thing to be anxious over.
And it was the stream died and the audio stopped working, the computer rebooted or whatever. And I remember,
Brian, that was tonight's NSFW.
I know.
It was not a dream.
But like full on, and I tell you, I kid you not, like the chat room got up and left. That the end of my nightmare.
They walked away from their
computer.
Oh my God. They were all just like,
so
all right,
awesome.
I'm done.
They
I'm out of here.
Their houses. They left their houses.
I like to imagine that Brian's dream factory was like, listen, guys, this is a 90s dream. This, like, everybody leaving the venue. Like, we got to update, baby. Live with the new. He's live streaming now. All the chat room leaves. Come on. This is staring you in the face.
I'd like to think that it's more like this is my subconscious welcoming NSFW to the family of shows that I do now.
Things for Brian to panic about.
Exactly.
Well, you know, one way we could fix that, Brian, but maybe we want to do a commercial message first.
Indeed. Jolly Grim is a free-to-play online card game that is based on fairy tales. You assemble a team of creatures like Dracula, Chupacabra, and Kraken, and then fight to the death. www.jollygrim.com to test it out.
Can I go look? This sounds awesome.
Yes, let's look.
JollyGrim.com. Open alpha available now. This looks awesome because I totally played Magic the Gathering. I played the Star Wars customizable card game. I love all of this stuff. All right, I'm not going to sign up now, but I am going to. I'm looking at the how to play. It looks like a Yu-Gi-Oh or a Pokemon type setup. Awesome.
Yeah, well, yeah. There's an online interface. The website looks fantastic and. You know, they're Weird Things fans. They're Weird Things fans enough to sponsor this show. So
awesome.
Support your fellow weirdos and go on over to jollygrim.com.
I'm back on Team Weirdlings. I want Weirdlings.
Very cool. So, it's been a real slow week for science news. I mean, well, we had the brain imaging thing.
You never call me randomly just to geek out about an amazing week of science news. And you totally called this week. You're like, seriously, this week's been amazing, Brian. Are you seeing the news?
It's hard to imagine a week where you can have stories competing with faster-than-light neutrinos.
Yes. Okay.
So.
Wait, which is better?
Yes.
The SpaceX Buck Rogers straight vertical takeoff and landing rocket, or supposedly faster than light neutrinos?
Well,
brain no function.
How do I answer that? I want to have a discussion about the FTL neutrinos where we don't all do like, and we're not going to like caveats like, well, of course it's not likely. Of course it's not likely. Of course it's not. It's experimental error. I mean, we'll just come right out and say it. Yes. It's got to be that.
Yes.
But if it's not, let's talk about the but if it's not.
I'll tell you what's not experimental is this hilarious joke that I read on Twitter that it was Rabbit Badger, which is bartender says, we don't serve neutrinos here. Neutrino walks into a bar.
Yeah,
it's awesome.
Yeah, that's pretty good.
That's awesome.
Well played, sir. What's the other? I forget what brilliant scientist said it, but it was just like you can have relativity, causality, and time travel or faster than speed of light travel. Choose any two. Like I'm gonna not remember it.
I think it was Scientific America did a rundown where they talked to like six or seven scientists and you had sort of the curmudgeons were like, of course it's not. It's like, yeah, we know. But you know, here's a fun little thing for right now, a fun thing to think about because, you know, we got very smart people, smarter than me. You know, I actually sat down to watch the presentation they gave about it. and understood every single word of it. By that, I mean I knew what the words meant. I didn't know what they meant when they were all put together.
Which almost meant, nearly but, positive they were speaking English.
I could pronounce yes. almost every single phoneme I heard. It was amazing.
Yes, that was about the level that I went at it. But, you know, and hearing some neutrino researchers say that, like, listen, it's a big complex thing. But anyhow, here's the thing. There is a third way, according to some scientists. And the third way is people have talked about, like, you know, there could be a thing where you don't violate causality. And for those of you who don't know what that is, that's basically the problem with any kind of time travel. It's one of the reasons, like, I've avoided it in science fiction writing and all that is if you can go back and you can change the past, whatever, it causes lots of problems in physics, causes lots of problems in trying to make things work. It just – everything seems to fall apart, and it's a reason why scientists have tried to ignore it.
And keep in mind also that essentially faster than light travel is – it is time travel. If you could do the one, you could do the other. And so it's not a half measure. It's not, you know, just a halfway thing to be like, oh, no, no, no. I'm just going real fast. I'm not traveling time, yeah. officer. We're all cool here.
But there is an out. There is an out.
Ah.
And that is – the out is this, is that you don't travel faster than the speed of light. The speed of light is still the speed limit. But the way we measure distance could be called into question because there could be other dimensions. Things are folded up into other dimensions. And so light may have to go across – you know, light may have to go through all the little wrinkles in your bedsheet to get from one point to another. But a neutrino might be able to go straight right through. And that's the idea that it's still traveling at that speed of light, but the way we measure distance is affected by all these little tiny, you know, the way these dimensions are folded up, and there might be some effect where you observe them or not. So you have, you know, nearer stars like Alpha Centauri, like 3.5 light years away, but maybe, you know, that's because of all those little, that little folded up dimensions.
Folded up,
you know,
dimensions, yeah.
Yeah.
And if you,
and
you go
also
straight across.
Have to make sure that you get the sports almanac from Biff.
Yes.
Because otherwise, there's no way you could convert it to Hell Valley in 1985.
Yes.
And you're never going to get to third base with Marty's mom.
Are you two finished?
Yes. Actually, there's another. First of all, that is a very good explanation that allows you to. Because we don't care about whether or not we're actually traveling through time or actually going faster than light. We care about whether or not we can use that as a plot device for our awesome sci-fi stories and have them be believable. And I like that as a way to work around it.
Yeah, exactly. I think that's the bottom line is that, you know, that when we think about FTL, we're not really thinking like, do we go faster than, you know, we're faster than a photon? No. Can we just get to interesting planets in our own lifetimes.
In a lifetime, yes.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
And we'll have to teleport there anyways, but that's a whole other discussion. We won't be taking spaceships. I'm just telling you now. You have to teleport.
There's a... I think it was... And I might have been thinking about this when we were talking about absorbing energy from the sun, but I think it was John Scalzi's Old Man's War where he was talking about... they have essentially like a warp technology, but there was a brief discussion where they say like, oh yes, no, warping is impossible. In you cannot warp from one part of the universe to another. However, what we do is we warp to a universe next door that is so close to our exact universe that that we will never in a million years be able to find any differences at all. But it's technically a different universe. But
yeah,
it's good enough for government work because all the shipments arrive right on time, just as we expect.
Of course, that university left. All your family and friends die. Is the little detail.
Oh, sure.
You're like,
can you kiss your kids goodbye on the launch pad, knowing you're going to go see those alternate universe kids?
But that's the question. That's the big debate. A year ago, I got in with OMG Chad about whether or not you would step into a transporter, knowing that your physical body would be destroyed, and that when you woke up, you would be a very similar consciousness in a different body assembled from scratch. And he couldn't handle that. He was like, no.
Hey, you guys, I don't know if I'd get on the transporter.
For some people, that's like, Brian, can we give you a date rape drug? You'll have absolutely no memory what happened. We'll make sure your body is restored back to normal and do things to you.
But you're leaving out the other part, which is you will get to work on time. And on the other side of the planet, and like, well, yes, then
we'll give you some money. When you wake up, there will be money in your pocket.
That, who would like a gift certificate to Arby's?
That's right. Are you down with it? Is that cool?
Okay, yes. Yes, I am. Okay. Done.
We're going to use that Men in Black mind wiper on you.
Sure. Yes. 100%. Arby's.
Now, somewhere there's a videotape of the things that happened.
Okay. Now you're changing the rules.
Just
now
as there's somewhere there's a videotape.
We've altered
of
the
you
deal.
That,
pray we don't alter it any further.
Somewhere there's a videotape of you in that transporter dying in agonizing death as you're like burned to death and incinerated. And then you pop out some other side before that happens, before your other body dies. You're like, hey, that didn't hurt at all. We're like, we're not going to show you the video.
That idea was kind of explored similar to that with Orson Scott Card in the Worthing saga, where it's a universe where you have the ability to go into hibernation for years at a time and you will not age during that time. However, it's one of those things that it's expensive because you're not making any money during that time. You have to have enough money that you can afford to go to sleep and pay for the stuff. So the very rich they sleep 5 days a week. They only wake up for weekends, which means they live, you know, three times longer than everyone else. And then the super elite will, you know, only wake up once a year and they live for thousands of years. And the whole process is they do this theater dressing where they go in and they give you an injection and you go to sleep. And then that's when the cameras turn off. And then after the cameras leave, they're like, okay, now let's do it for real. And then they plug in this thing and the sleeping body immediately, like, they make a backup of your brain right before they finish putting you to sleep. And then what you never remember is the agonizing screams for however long it takes till you finally go to sleep for the next year.
See, I would like to imagine that, like, you're like, it's maybe like some big theatrical display for how well this works and everything. And it's like, you know, just cameras on like, you know, two like super far away places. And like, you know, you have like some like theater actors, like, you know, like singing a musical, like some show tune, like once you're a jet all the way from your first cigarette to your last dying day. And then like, boom, he goes from one place to the other. What they don't show you is the one body. It's like, and then, the fire's burning me. As on the other side, he just pops out and he keeps singing. Like,
yes, yes, that's exactly it. And of course, that was what was so great when they explored that in The Prestige. Similar idea.
Oh yeah.
Spoiler alert.
It's like going home.
The Prestige materials. Which, if you really enjoy that element of the story and you did see the movie, I very highly recommend reading the book. Because I'll get into that'll be my pick, but I'll get into why The Prestige of the book is amazing.
Very good. It's almost reads like a sequel. I mean, they took elements from the original one, but the book is told, a lot of it's told in contemporary times. So it's very, very worth checking out. So, and other total no science. Do we have any reads to do?
It's funny that you should ask, Andrew, because we certainly do. AnimeCons TV is a monthly podcast brought to you by the team behind AnimeCons.com. They bring you convention reviews as well as cosplay tips, convention-related discussions, and great interviews by famous guests like some dude named Brian Brushwood.
Brian? I was on AnimeCons, and let me tell you, they are awesome. We met the whole gang again down at Dragon Con. They had me up to Port Con in Maine. We did an interview. If you want to hang on to the sweet, sweet magic of Dragon Con, why don't you dip your toe in the water? Do some more Anime Cons. Do them virtually through Anime Cons TV.
Absolutely. Yeah. Subscribe on iTunes or watch them at AnimeCons.tv. Run, of course, by the amazing Patrick Delahenty. Huge Weird Things fan and a lover of women.
I'm sorry, you said a lover of what?
Women. He just lays them down.
Okay.
He's a stud.
That's
He's just like James Bond is like, whoa, clear the way, Patrick. Because
we're like, how am I supposed to fight the bad guys and bag the ladies when you're busy taking half my work?
Exactly.
Delahanty.
And then Patrick just wipes his hand on his face.
I don't know if people realize this, but it seems like on this podcast, we replaced one word for another. And we try to get away from it, but we can't stop talking about it. We used to talk a lot about this singularity thing.
And now we talk a lot about SpaceX.
Oh my God! Yes.
Well, Andrew, like the waxing and waning of the moon, the seasons change, and we move from singularity talk to SpaceX talk.
Dude, freaking SpaceX is it's as though, and I'll tell you what, it was great having because Elon Musk was in the second Iron Man movie, right?
Yeah, yeah.
It's like that. How awesome is that? Because he is our Tony Stark, and we project all our hopes and dreams on his robot cowboy lifestyle. Is he going to retire on the on? I was going to say on the moon. He's going to Mars. Elon Musk is going to retire in a Adobe on Mars, and it's going to be amazing.
So news came out today.
You guys want to come to my place?
So news came out today, and it was sort of a kind of a thing where it wasn't an announcement by SpaceX. It was just an FAA permit request got released. And what it was is SpaceX has a leased some facility space, and I think it's McGregor, Texas. It's where some other people do some where they test. There's like a rocket facility there. That's where Blue Origin, which is the Jeff Bezos company, does some testing. You've got there's a couple other like Armadillo Aerospace, which is John Carmack's, and two others I can't remember. There's a couple other companies out there doing some exciting stuff in different areas of rocketry. A couple months ago, Blue Origin, which is super secret about what they do, they did a test of a rocket, and they're working on a single stage to orbit. That's a rocket where it's all one body, nothing splits off, whatever, all one body, takes off, goes up, orbits the Earth, and would come back down. They did a low altitude test, and then they got the rocket up to 45,000 feet, and they had it got instability, and it was blown up, and you know, they're figuring out what happened, but this is the process. You know, you blow up a lot of these rockets to find out where they work. So that was kind of, there's like one grainy photo of their rocket, which is pretty cool. There's been previous work on trying to build these single stage to orbit rockets. Back in the 90s, there was the DCX program by McDonnell Douglas. But the problem they had with this, I didn't understand, you know, part of the reason why it got abandoned is, you know, one of their biggest clients was going to be the military. But in order for the military spec says military rockets can't just do orbital. They have to be able to do polar orbits. And when you got a single stage rocket, it's barely enough fuel. I mean, theoretically, we haven't even been able to get one up into orbit of the Earth. We did, you know, the moon, but here we haven't. Do we get one up into orbit? You know, it's the ratio to fuel to mass ratio is like 24-1 or something. So it means, you know, almost all of your rocket has got to be fuel. And so to get into a polar orbit's hard. Just getting to regular orbit's a challenge enough. But SpaceX, Elon Musk and co. filed for permission to take one of their Falcon or one of their Dragonfly capsules, rather, using their boosters, and to try some testing of a rocket that takes off vertically and then would land vertically. And they want to go up as high as something like 15,000 feet within like some of the first few tests. And they're going to make a go at it using their existing engines.
That is amazing to me. And first of all, understand, like recently I had a show in Huntsville, Alabama. They were nice enough to take me to the Space and Rocket Center where Space Camp was, right? And they actually have what's the rocket they have for the Apollo program?
Saturn?
Yes. Saturn V, right? Is that what it is?
Yeah.
Yeah. So they have a Saturn V rocket, and you walk along this thing, and it's just yards and yards and yards of the first stage and the second stage of the third stage. It's a freaking building that gets shot into space, right?
Oh, yeah.
And you realize each of these stages spends all its fuel, and then they got to shed the weight, so they drop the first stage so that the second stage can blow all its fuel and up you go just to get out of the Earth's gravity well. And then you look at the lunar lander module, and you realize that this thing came down, had fuel to blast out so that it slowed itself down and gently landed on the lunar surface. And when it was time to go, there was enough fuel still left in there that they were able to single stage rocket blast this thing out of the gravity well. And you're looking at, I mean, to compare the two, imagine if the whole rocket is my arm. The lunar lander module that blasts off, the single stage rocket that's able to get off of the lunar surface is maybe about the size from my last knuckle to the end of my middle finger compared to the size of the entire rocket. It is amazing what a huge problem Earth's gravity well is and how much raw power it takes.
Damn you, gravity!
Yes. Yeah. And I would imagine, I mean, this if they're able to pull this off, this would be such a revolution. I mean,
yeah, the the big thing is that ratio of fuel to weight, and you know, we've got a whole new generation of carbon composites of these things, and one description I read was basically it's like trying to make it, you know, your rocket's got to be like an eggshell. You know, it's the egg is the weight, and then the fuel inside of there is the yolk and all that other stuff. It's my egg anatomy for you. So, I mean, that's the challenge. But the fact that up until now, you know, for doing really heavy lift, that had seemed to be the goal of SpaceX. They want to get these bigger and bigger boosters. They have a booster on the you know, plans, which would be more powerful than the F1s that powered the Saturn V.
Right.
And, you know, they want to go about it a big way. But the idea that they're also like, hey, we want to do some testing to see about doing a single stage to orbit rocket. That was cool. I remember reading like Robert Heinlein novels back in the day where it was just one rocket, none of the stage stuff, none of these like three or four stages, just throwing this,
like
your
Ray
beer
Bradbury,
cans out at
right?
Earth. What's that?
Like Ray Bradbury stuff, where he's, you know, where it was conceivable, like, oh, if I could just save up, like they acted like it was an RV. If you could just spend enough money, you could get yourself a single stage rocket and go to the moon or whatever.
So, you know, orbit at least. Pretty awesome. So it's exciting times right now. I mean, it's really exciting times where, you know, on one hand we kind of bemoan, you know, oh, NASA, but on the other hand, you know, we've got billionaires like Jeff Bezos, you know, out there who this summer, I mean, that was an exciting, the Blue Origin test, like they're trying to keep it very low profile because, you know, they've got, you know, Bezos and co have got more money than they need, you know, to be able to do this. They're trying to do this. They want to experiment and let things blow up without attracting too much attention.
Right.
Because, you know, then that's a hard part. And I am very sympathetic to NASA. Sometimes we get very critical because of what happens, you know, when bureaucracies try to do stuff. But, you know, NASA, if NASA had did that, you know, the headline would be NASA rocket failure.
NASA flubs again.
Yeah. Gerber. You know, and they got to go in front of, you know, Congress and like, well, you blew this up. And, you know, they've got to answer to people who are like, well, how do we make it so we don't blow any up? And it's like, well, you can't. You can't.
That's what's beautiful about it being Elon Musk's money. And maybe he has to answer to shareholders or whatever. But it's just like he could blow up. As far as I'm concerned, that dude could blow up 25,000 rocket ships as long as by the time I get on one, he's worked it all out.
Yeah,
Brian, well,
and you have to.
We've killed every astronaut, every stunt pilot we have. This is the 25,001st rocket. Yes. Are you ready to hop on board?
Yes, but you're really sure? This is when I'm about to get on, and Elon Musk is sitting there with a martini in his hand. He's like, "Good luck, sir." And I turn to him, I'm like, "Pinky promise, you swear this isn't gonna blow up?" He's like, "Pinky promise, son."
Yeah. It's like, now we're drafting podcast hosts. So you get in this one. We got the epic food time guy behind you.
If your pinky belongs to a dead man, it doesn't count. So it's been sort of more of a news-heavy weird things discussion, but it's been a lot of fun. And again, big shout-out to our friend who's going to go out there and get her own super-powered kidney. And
hell yeah.
Yes.
You want to do some recommendations?
Yeah, let's do that. Let's do some recommendations. Why don't you go ahead, Mr. Johnny Recommendation?
Yeah, well, we mentioned before, if you have not read the Prestige book, you know, I very, very, very much think you should, especially if you are like me and you first found out about that story by way of the awesome, awesome, awesome Christopher Nolan adaptation. It is a very different kind of story. Nolan did a very interesting job in adapting the work and taking away kind of this very specific, you know, magic, you know, dueling magician-centric rivalry story to it, which is certainly a part of the book. But there's almost more of a... it comes off as more of a horror story. And specifically, as I mentioned before with Brian, they dwell a lot on the prestige materials, which if you have seen the movie, then you will know what I am talking about. But the method by which one of the characters does a fantastic trick is certainly something that is very, very gruesome. And there's even a level beyond what you see in the movie. There is a further consequence to how he achieves this effect. And it is awesome and amazing, and I very much recommend everybody going to read The Prestige.
So I had mentioned The Worthing Saga by Orson Scott Card, and I'm actually going to look it up here. I'm going to type in Worthing Saga on Amazon. I don't know whether or not it's available on audiobook, but I know that The Worthing Saga was originally a collection of short stories that takes place in a... One of my favorite things about science fiction is that you get to explore different worlds, and they tend to be consistent in their own places. And some of them are places you visit, and it's fun, and then you leave. And some just stick with you and have images and ideas that are part of your fantasies for the rest of your lives. And I read this, 13 years ago, and it has really, really stuck with me. I think this may be one of my favorite, most underappreciated science fiction stories out there, because it's not just the idea of people who gain status by sleeping more days out of the year than the other stuff. It's the story of one particular person who, as a youth, discovers he has talents. Maybe we'll say sort of a next phase of evolution. And eventually inspires a religion. And I don't want to get beyond that. But we're talking, I mean, this thing, when I say this thing is epic, I don't even know that begins to cover it. We're talking thousands and thousands of years. There's one scene where this character is telling someone how to make the ink a particular way for what he's about to tell him to write down. And the guy doesn't understand why he spent days. He's like, because this ink will last tens of thousands of years. And that's how important this is. And you get to experience such a massively epic amount of time. Really, really like The Worthing Saga by Orson Scott Card.
Very cool. I have a sci-fi pick. And it's something I read years ago, but I loved. It was one of the first sort of sci-fi stories that really stuck with me. And if you like The Hunger Games and you like that sort of survival sort of genre, I would say Tunnel in the Sky by Robert Heinlein.
Oh.
And he explores some really interesting concepts. Sort of the premise, one of the premises there is that, like, you know, we have, you know, he kind of buys into the whole Malthusian argument of overpopulation or whatever, but it's sort of as a thing to set up the storyline. But the idea is they develop this ability to teleport people to other planets. And it's about young people, and you have to go through this sort of survival thing to be able to prove that you can survive. And they send some young people to this just really inhospitable planet, and everything goes wrong. And it's sort of told from the point of view of the protagonist, who's got to figure out just the basics of survival. You know, everything he brought with him gets taken away from him, and he's just left with basically his own devices to try to succeed. And this book was written over 50 years ago, but it's a classic sci-fi story. And, you know, in the light of Hunger Games and Terra Nova, this is sort of the cool sort of, you know, one of the most, the original kind of, you know, young person trying to survive story. So
only
Tunnel
less
in the
moody
Sky by Robert Heinlein.
Than Terra Nova.
What's that?
Less teen angst than Terra Nova.
Well, no, yeah. you got the your beefs with Hunger Games. Right.
Well, okay. Don't even get me started on Hunger Games.
Nobody get him started on Hunger Games.
The whiniest revolution.
Well, gentlemen, weirdos, weirdlings.
Weirdos should be should be boys. Weirdling should be girls.
The Weirdettes. Two should always be spoken together, like ladies and gentlemen, Damen et Monsieur, weirdos and weirdlings.
It's been weird.
Saying whatever you want for only $30.